It is Wednesday, February the 27th, 2013. Time again for After News with Amos, the talk show of record of our African-American community. I'm Amos Brown. Glad to have you here. Coming up on the program today, near our second hour, there's going to be a meeting tomorrow over at the Julia Carson Government Center, Fall Creek and Delaware, dealing with mass transit. We haven't even voted on the thing yet, and they're getting ready to call stuff the green line, the blue line, the red line, the chartreuse line. Anyway, the mass transit folks will be here. The IndyConnect folks will be here to talk about that meeting, encourage you to come out. Tell them where the stops ought to go for the, what do they call it, bus rapid transit, light rail, heavy rails, other stuff. That's coming up. We may even have time to talk about why did they pick on poor Roy Hibbert last night. Dr. White, why did they pick on Roy Hibbert and got everybody thinking it's a brawl, and the brother didn't even throw a punch? To me, I don't think they did any behavior that you would have temporarily suspended a kid out of any school system you ran in that mess. Now the guy that hit him that would have been a 5-day suspension in any school. Anyway, but starting the program, we thought about a month ago when he was here about a month ago after announcing his retirement, that would have been Dr. Eugene White's last interview, but it's not. He's here as he is counting the days, counting the hours, before his retirement. Anyway, the superintendent, and I think do I have somebody, Chris? We're trying to figure out. Oh, Read Across America. Yeah. All right, Dr. Eugene White, and he knows about Read Across America. That's a program with the National Education Association. They're in town. I know they're at one of your schools.
Yeah, we have in the whole district.
At what?
Yeah, we do Read Across America every year.
We're going to talk to him for a hot second. But anyway, the superintendent is here because we talked about Riverside School yesterday, and we're going to give him that opportunity. But I first want to find out what is going on with Read Across America. Chris is quickly typing the name up there. Doc, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
You look so relaxed. I thought he was going to come in like a summer flowery shirt, Bermuda shorts or something like that. But he's in browns and beige and blue today. You counting the days? Are you packed?
I mean, you mean from my office? Yes.
Yeah.
The answer is yes. I am packed.
You're packed. You just got a little briefcase left.
A little more than a briefcase, but just about there.
How you going to feel when you walk out? And that's got to be difficult.
Well, I feel like, July 2005, mm-hmm. I compare where we were then and where we're now, and I feel great. I feel that we've made substantial progress in the last 7.5 years. I'm very pleased with what we've moved the district to. So I'm going to feel a sense of achievement somewhat. Never going to be completely satisfied because there is a great deal still to be done, but it's like a relay. I think that I made up some time and space and moved the district a little further along, and right, someone else has to take it from here.
And of course, being a superintendent, he is familiar with not only the National Education Association, but their Read Across America program. They're in a bunch of IPS schools today, and Earl Wilma with the National Education Association has been at a couple of those schools. He's on our live line. Welcome.
Thank you. I have. I've been to Jonathan Jennings, and now we're at Eliza Baker with the NEA Catavan to talk about literacy and good dental health.
Why is NEA involved in Read Across America?
We're involved in Read Across America because we know how important it is for children to be successful when it comes to reading. We know that if children don't read read on grade level by the end of third grade, mm-hmm. there's a good chance they won't graduate. So we are working very hard across the nation to try to make sure that our kindergarten through third grade students are successful and doing well.
This is something that NEA, National Education Association, does all across America. What brought you here to the Hoosier State, the battleground of education reform?
Well, we heard this is a great place to be, and we have a lot of great members here that are affiliated with ISTA, and we've been meeting with them and talking with them. And Teresa Meredith, our state vice president here, has been reading with me, and we've had an exciting time this morning, like I said, at Jonathan Jennings, and got to read Cat in the Hat, Green Eggs and Ham, to all the kindergarten through second grade students. And then Delta Dental of Indiana presented a check to the school library for $1,000 and gave every child a Cat in the Hat book along with a toothbrush and toothpaste. You've never seen children so excited over a toothbrush and toothpaste.
so that was more exciting than anything. As you look at these battles and public education under attack, Indiana is one of the ground zeros in that effort. In our studio is our retiring superintendent, Dr. Eugene White. We don't know what that future is going to hold for the district. As the district evaluates a superintendent, what should the community be wary of? You know, can just some Michael Bloomberg-type businessman come in here and run a school district in a city where 70% of the school-age kids live in poverty?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I think if you look at other places in the same demographics, you'll find that the superintendents that have been successful are ones that are very collaborative. They're the ones that involve the community and the parents, but they also are listening to the voice of teachers and educational support personnel, because they're the ones that are actually teaching the children and working with them every day. So I think you have to be leery of someone who's just set promises something and comes in and is going to direct everything from a headquarters building somewhere. You've really got to build that trust with your staff and build that trust with your teachers and really collaborate among all of the people, because there are a lot of people here who are really passionate about public education and really care about kids. So it's about building a collaborative coalition with everybody to make sure that children are successful.
Can a business person run a school system? And if they can, does it have to be a business person with a passion for kids?
It has to be somebody with a passion for kids, and I won't rule out somebody coming from business, but they have to understand that when we open the doors of a public school, that we take everybody that comes to us. We take every student that comes in that door, and we treasure them, and we care about them. Kind of the business model is we're going to discard the raw product on the front end if we don't really think it meets our standards. Or we don't think that we can do the work that we need to do with it. And that's entirely different from public schools, where we're taking everybody and trying to make sure that they're successful.
One final thing, it seems that policymakers and politicians are beating up on teachers, but rarely do these education reformers talk about the importance of the school leader, the importance of a quality principal. Why is it you think we're not talking as much about that? Because that's the key. You have a great principal, you can have a great school,
somebody
that can motivate your members.
That's right. And, of course, we have a lot of principal members across the country as well. It just kind of varies from state to state. But the thing about it is that I would say about that is I will tell you that what teachers tell me is they would rather have an excellent principal that's collaborative and works with them than a bonus. They would rather have a school leader who cares about kids, who cares about them, who is willing to work with them, than a bonus for performance. So it is about school leadership. And if you're looking for a superintendent, then you certainly need to look at someone who can model that kind of leadership for the principals in the district, because that's what's going to get you somewhere, is collaboration and team building.
Now, we got an outgoing superintendent here, so if you're looking for a space on the Read Across America bus and van, somebody that can read, he's available starting next week.
Well, just tell him to just stand outside the building, and we'll come by and pick him up. How's that? You wait outside the building and we'll come pick you up.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Thank you so much.
Earl Wilmer with the Read Across America with the National Education Association. The superintendent, Dr. White, has happened to $1,000 check has been left at one of his schools.
At two of his schools.
Two of his schools.
Thank you, Dr. White.
Well, thank you, Earl.
Uh-huh. All right. We're with Dr. Eugene White. So here we are with Riverside. That's been a great school rebuilt. Fantastic school. I think we did the broadcast from there a couple of years ago. Great school, kind of retro look.
Right.
And has kind of struggled up and down in terms of academics. Right. Why? But people regard that as reflective of the neighborhood, that school, the Riverside neighborhood. Hmm. Why the decision not to make that school a part of that community in terms of being a community school?
Well, it's been a community school. Matter of fact, some years ago when I was deputy, it was recognized in the National Magazine for being a outstanding community service school. Marshall Foley was principal at that time. So it's always been a great community school. Mm-hmm. This is about more than community school. This is about expanding educational options for students. Instead of just having a community school, we're talking about having a community school and a Montessori magnet school, which gives them additional options and also will provide them with preschool because the Montessori school has the preschool component. And so students in that neighborhood who have appeared with substantial gaps in their readiness will now be able to come to school better prepared. When you look at the neighborhood, really, there's something of a misconception. Mm-hmm. Because in the ADM count for that school, there were 466 kids, okay?
Okay.
Of that 466 kids, 282 of those kids live west of White River, okay, which means they were not in the neighborhood, okay?
All right.
When it really breaks down, Amos, about 101 students actually live in the Riverside neighborhood. Okay. So in other words, about a third lives in the neighborhood, a little less than that. And we don't want to stop that. What we're saying is we want to give them additional option. If they're in kindergarten, first grade, they can apply to go to Montessori. But if they're getting ready for preschool, they can go to Montessori. In addition to that, students will be able to go to either school 67 or school 63, which are both community schools. And we haven't had enough magnet options on the west side, and this is just adding to those options. We have several other things we need to do over there, but this gives them another option on the west side.
What about from a kid morale standpoint? Because obviously the kids know the grade of that school, an F. And how would you answer the kids that feel this decision is done because they didn't do a good job?
No, I think
you can understand why.
I definitely can. I think people need to communicate. This is not about their grade. This is about their opportunity. And we feel that a lot of their performance is not based on them per se. It's based on their preparation. It's based on the opportunities we presented to them. And we think that they will be able to see very quickly that we're not doing something to them. We're doing something for them. Everything they have at 44, they will have at 63 and 67, including their clothing bank and their food pantry. They won't be missing any of those particular opportunities. So we will take care of them.
Is 63 and 67 relatively new buildings, or are these kids from 44 going from an older building to a newer?
44, you know, it's about, 6 years old.
Right.
63, it's about 5 years old. 67 just got back in their school, really this year full time, so it's newly renovated.
Okay.
So they're all in
They're
all in great shape in terms of their physical, facilities.
What about, because when I looked at the performance of school 67,
yeah,
it's a B school, and made great progress. They were a D to a B, even under Tony Bennett's, you know, convoluted system. Are you concerned, though, that not for this school year, because everybody, ISTEP is getting ready to start next week and the whole ISTEP process. Are you concerned, though, that if you got some kids that maybe haven't done well and they're going into, you know, a school that's done well, that that could lower the performance and puts extra pressure on everybody?
You know, I don't know about putting extra pressure, but we have great teachers at school 6 or 7, and we have very good teachers at 44. We think the combination of moving that principal and some teachers, most of the teachers at 67 will stay there. Right. Some of the teachers from 44 will go over. School 44 Montessori is going to have some teachers coming over, and they're going to have to hire some teachers. But we think the quality of instruction and the principal leadership will determine the quality of the school. And having Mark Nardo to come over to 44 to do the Montessori will be great, because he's been great. And to have Cassandra Davis to move over to 67, I think will be very, very positive for that school.
So the leader of 44 goes to 67.
Right.
And the leader of 67 goes to 44.
Right.
So the kids at 44 will see their leader.
Right.
And, you know, unless the board does something stupid. Since all the technically all the administrators are under, you know, you may not have a job, technically.
Yeah, they've been notified, but I think that's one of the things that Dr. Hinckley has to address, because she knows that they're going to have to get that resolved very quickly. And our principals, many of them are in high demand. We can't afford to lose them. So I think they're going to be rectifying that pretty quickly.
Yeah, because you don't want to, yeah, because if you got a good principal and that principal doesn't know what's going on, it's like the athlete business.
Yeah. Well, the principal is the key. It's kind of like Earl said. I mean, the teacher is the MVP, but without those principals supporting instructional supervision, what have you, then that teacher is going to struggle and the kids are going to struggle. So you got to have good leaders. And we think both of those people are great leaders.
You may have questions for Dr. Eugene White. This is his last interview as superintendent of the Indianapolis Public Schools.
Yes,
maybe the next time he comes back, he'll be as a book author.
I've been that already.
It'd be a New York Times bestseller. Why Joel Klein Failed in New York. That would
tell David Harris that.
Oh, 239-13. Let me go on the phones and Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Amos. You know you got the best show on the street.
How you doing? What's up?
All right. Dr. White, I just want to say it's been a pleasure having you as superintendent. You have opened the way for IPS and new doors and everything. Are you going to still stay in the state of Indiana, or are you leaving us? Or are we going to miss your knowledge all the way around?
Kevin, I really don't know. I had indicated some time ago I would like to probably relocate either part-time or full-time to the southeast, because I'm from the southeast part of the country. But at this particular time, I haven't made a final decision. I love Indianapolis, especially for 9 months of the year. And so I'm not going to do anything hasty, but it just depends on the opportunities. I am looking at 3 or 4 options, and those options will kind of determine what I do and where I live.
I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 this afternoon's name is, you mentioned the count of the kids at school 44. I understand that every school district and school did a second, what's called ADM count, a second enrollment count, that was mandated by the legislature, and a lot of it came back from what IPS and other urban school districts had said over the years. And I understand your ADM, the unofficial account a week ago, was kind of, you had a little bit of a gain and steady. Have they tightened up the numbers?
No, we are almost identical to our ADM count in the fall.
And that's considered a great victory, right?
That is a victory. I think, Amos, if you really look at it, and you can understand this because you deal with stats, if we had not had the takeover action, we would have reversed the loss of students in IPS. Mm-hmm. When you count the number of kids who are actually in IPS, in the takeover schools and everything else, we've halted that exodus from the district. So we're pretty stable, really, with numbers. But right now, we are very encouraged that our January numbers are almost identical to those in September.
The state snuck out the graduation rate data, which is, and you've been around. That's the first time that's happened. No press conference, mm-hmm. no big announcement, nothing. Did that surprise you that all of a sudden it was just like, it's out there and I'm the only one talking about it?
It disappointed me, Amos, because they should have been out in October.
Oh.
Okay, that's when they should have been out. So they didn't come out in October. We didn't know why. They had to reconcile some things, but never later than November.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, we thought something was wrong. We think when you look at the numbers overall for the state, they should be going up. Definitely should not be falling off. But I don't know the rationale behind the delay. But for some reason, we just could not get those numbers from them. And maybe it's an anomaly. Maybe next year we'll have it back together. But this is very unusual.
Your overall graduation rate went down a couple of percentage points. African-American went down a couple of percentage points. And obviously they're only counting. That does not include this year, Arlington, Howe, and Manual. Is some of that decline because after the graduation rate data was released last year, there was the talk about waivers, mm-hmm. and you said, hey, mm-hmm. we're going to cut back on them, mm-hmm. and the state, in putting out the data, they have not released the waiver data. So it's like, guys, come on.
Yeah, we have fewer waivers this year, and we were set to have even fewer for 13.
Okay.
And we had said it was going to be that way because mm-hmm. we had tightened that up, and that is a part of it mm-hmm. in terms of IPS numbers. So because of that, we are pleased with the numbers, but we knew that our waiver numbers would get smaller because we had to tighten up that particular system.
239-1310, 239-1310. This afternoon's name is with Dr. Eugene White. We'll take a break. We'll come back with our remaining moments with him. Your opportunity calls, or send us an email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. And I think, didn't some IPS teams win in the first round of the men's basketball? I can look at the scores.
Most of them had byes last night, but
that's a good thing. Kind of, sort of.
Great thing.
That's a great thing. Afternoons with Amos with the superintendent. He's got, and you're done as of Friday?
Not officially.
But in terms of going to the office every day?
No, I got to go to the office next week every day because we have a transition to make. But after next Friday, it'll be a little different.
It'll be a little different. You get to sleep late.
Among other things.
You don't have to make the decision that there's ice on the ground whether there's a 2-hour delay.
Now just turn over, Amos, and roll over.
It's Afternoons with Amos after these. And Afternoons with Amos brought to you by the Indiana Civil Rights Commission. How critical is I-STEP and I-READ? And for people listening to you right now who are parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, and they got any kind of skin in the game, and not just IPS, but any school that their kids or grandkids are going to, how important is these first 3 weeks? You could be free now. 3 weeks in March with I-STEP, I-READ. What tips would you give to make sure their kids and grandkids are prepared?
First of all, Amos, those particular assessments are very, very important because they are the rating mechanism or the benchmark that people go by when they assess your school or the quality of your school. Mm-hmm. There are also those benchmarks that allow teachers and others to assess whether or not kids are prepared to move on. And in the case of I-READ, based on some people's interpretation, you have to pass that test to be promoted from third grade. The law doesn't say that, and I hope we look at the law a little differently. But the I-READ test is a crucial test because it is one of those determining factors for promotion. And so I would say to parents and guardians, don't blow this thing off. Make sure your kids understand the importance of it, but don't paralyze them with fear. Make sure they get the proper amount of rest, they eat properly. Make sure you get the test schedule from the school mm-hmm. because it's not every day, all day. There are just partial segments that the test is being worked in. But you should have that information so you'll know just what's going on in terms of assessment. And like you said, Amos, it starts in March. There are parts of it in March, parts of it in April. Right. And it's just important for people to know. But it's very, very important for the kid, for the school, and definitely for our community, because you got a rating for everything.
I had somebody, you know, here in the station the other day. We were looking at that video of that Manti Te'o not okay. doing well at the combine.
Yeah.
And he was talking about what a great lesson the combine could be for students to understand. This is like a job interview. And in mm-hmm. a job interview, you got to demonstrate performance in terms of, can you do this job? How well do you interview? It was almost like, because I'm sure the NFL is figuring out how they can make some more money off the combine, maybe let members of the public come in to see yeah. that. Is that the kind of thing that maybe our students need to see? In other words, to succeed in life, you have to perform, whether it's on that written test or whether it's mm-hmm. running down, are you fast in the 40?
I think that's part of the lesson, Amos. The other thing that teachers and everybody else need to know is that testing is a way of life for professionals. I mm-hmm. mean, lawyers, doctors, engineers, nurses, cosmetologists, you have to pass the test. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. So you got to get kids to see that it's an expectation that you're going to be prepared to perform.
Right.
And if it's in athletics, it's just as true as in other assessments. But the other thing with Te'o is this, and that is he is better than his 40 time. Mm-hmm. You see, when you go by specifics like the 40-yard dash time
right.
or your vertical jump mm-hmm. or what have you, those are good indicators, but they don't measure your heart, your determination, and your will.
And that goes back to not just depend on the test.
That's okay. What we're saying.
Okay. All right.
Exactly.
That's a good point. Exactly. Let me start with Anonymous. Hi there.
Anonymous.
Hi.
I just wanted to give Dr. White a compliment. I'm a Pike Township parent. So I not been in IPS, but I've always admired Dr. White has tried to do for IPS. I've always been team Dr. White. So I just wanted to wish you well in your future endeavors and to let you know that not all of us parents have been against what you've tried to do for the students and for the teachers and faculties of IPS. I think some of the things that you tried to do for the schools in terms of the medical and the technical things, trying to get kids prepared for life, and even small things like the school uniforms. Some of the foolishness that I used to hear them fighting against you with was just crazy. But I just want to let you know that I thought you did a wonderful job in what you had in front of you. So I just wanted to wish you well and let you know that some of us out here thought you did a great job.
Well, thank you very much.
I appreciate that. Was uniforms the biggest thing?
No. Oh, no. Now, there were so many things beyond uniform. I think the secondary magnet options were a big thing. I think overhauling the visual arts and the athletic programs was a big thing. I think instituting a series of alternative schools to keep kids in school was a big thing. I think instituting what we call the adjudicator made discipline more objective for placement. That was a big thing. There were many things a lot larger than what you could see in uniforms.
If you had to do something over again?
I think if I would have that particular opportunity, we tried to push things as quickly as we can. And we tried to institute a sense of urgency, but that was really put in overdrive when we got to the state takeover thing. And what we did the first semester of this year at John Marshall, mm-hmm. we probably should have done for the last 5 years, because we put it in overdrive to save that school from takeover. And that kind of urgency probably should have been instituted everywhere a lot sooner.
One of the things that actually surprised me about John Marshall in a positive sense, that for the class of 2012, African Americans, that graduation rate was 76%, second highest, right behind Broad Ripple. I was not expecting that, and that was a great testimony to those seniors.
It was a great testimony to those seniors and to the teachers and administrators who worked with them, because they had kept those kids from the time they were in seventh grade, and it wasn't always easy. It was a tough clientele, but those kids really came through. And this group this year is doing as well or better, so we're wishing them the best.
Oh, in the sectionals, Tech won, Marshall won, and Washington beat Addicts.
Well, Tech had a bye.
Oh, Tech had a bye. Washington, but Washington beat Addicts. 239-1310. Back to the phones, another anonymous. Hi there.
Take out a bye. Washington.
Whoa, anonymous, you got to turn your radio down so Dr. White doesn't hear himself say something 10 seconds after he says something. Are you there? Anonymous. Anonymous is not there. Let me go to, I'm losing track of what I'm doing here. Let me go back to, where am I going? I'm going to another anonymous. Hi there.
Hey, how's everyone doing?
We're fine.
Hey, hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to commend Dr. White, what he's done down here for the past 7 years. I know his biggest problem dealing with what he was doing was the parents. I want to know, could you speak on our students being behind because some of the parents are stubborn and didn't see your vision, so they bucked against the system that we must stress education. And I know a lot of parents dealing with the situation and going on with this Montessori school. I heard they were talking about dealing with Hispanic or whatever, that we must learn how to speak other languages, because in the future, if you're not bilingual, that's going to be another stumbling block for jobs. And we must stress discipline. I know when you was over at one school, The parents was complaining because you took the black young boys and you wanted to talk to them and they didn't like the way you did it. I just want to thank you for not giving in to the parents that didn't understand your vision. And also, I want to know, do you see opening down to Cobb County and down Atlanta that you would go down there?
Well, DeKalb is open, and I have no wishes of going to DeKalb. They have a mess down there right now. But I think that to answer your initial question, I don't think it was as much pushback from the parents as much as there was overall apathy in terms of what they could do to make a difference in their child's education. And part of that was because I had some very young parents, and we had not established that kind of communication that would get them involved, and that's why we put parent liaisons in every school just to communicate with parents, and that helped some. But the parents in the final results, we had a parent university to help us teach parents. It's just a long process, and we're going to have to continue to engage parents and get them involved. But without the parents, it's not a good relationship. We need a triangle. We need the school. Right. The parent, involved in that, as well as the community. And when the parents are missing, that straight line from the school to the community will not serve those kids as adequately as we need to. But I don't really have a lot of regrets for any of those things. Even the incident with the young men that was out at North Central, and we did what we had to do, and the kids did a great job, and most of them, well, they're all adult now, and I hear from them, and they're doing very well. So I've seen what works and what doesn't work. So we don't have to apologize for trying to help save kids.
Let me go to Dominic at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. My question is, I don't know if you recovered this already. I just got in my car and turned the radio on. I'm from Mississippi, and we have a Head Start program there that's 2 years. And this year, IPS is just starting a preschool program. Now, I want to know, since you are leaving, is the new superintendent going to stop that program?
Well, they're working right now to put together the first stage of a preschool program. We have the funding through Title I to do it. So I do expect that the interim superintendent, Dr. Hinckley, because she had preschool in Warren, yeah, she knows what to do. We have a good task force. So I still believe we're going to have the beginning of preschool in the 13-14 school year.
The fact that, Dr. White, that the House of Representatives passed a budget and passed a plan that provides some funding, particularly for low-income working-class parents, for preschool, for quality preschool, the fact that the governor wants that. In fact, at a press conference this morning, the governor praised the efforts of the House in terms of moving that. Is that also going to encourage Dr. Hinckley and the board to make sure that happens in IPS?
Well, the bad thing about that is the timing. Mm-hmm. If they approve that, Amos, as you know, it wouldn't be available for us for the 13-14 school year. But it's a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And I think all of those things encourage school districts to do what they can to start preschool programs. If it's going to be in a voucher form, that's okay, too. We're concerned that the money is not taking out the regular pot.
Right.
Because we have a big habit of that in Indiana. We have one pot for education money, and any new programs that are started, we kind of take it from that pot. And we need to add some more money to the pot. And so that's important. So it's good thinking. I hope we can carry it through.
Back to the phones. And Bob, hi there.
Hey, Brother Amos, and to Dr. White, I tell you, he touched on something what I was going to say. We appreciate him out there in Washington Township, and he spoke on what he did out there with the young men out in Washington Township. You're absolutely right. They love what you did. We look back now, and the ones that have came forward through all that, Dr. White, take your hat off to you, man. You keep doing what you're doing, man. We appreciate the time that we had with you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate it. Back to the phones, and and another anonymous. Hi there.
Anonymous.
Oh, yeah. Well, these are the best ones. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just tuned in, Amos.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to tell Dr. White thank you, because my daughter was under him at North Central, and not only did she graduate academically, she went ahead and went to IU. She's graduated from IU. And so I didn't know he was leaving, because I don't have anybody in Washington Township or in public schools right now. But I wanted to tell Dr. White, I really did appreciate him. Just like at the graduation, he told everybody he's not having no nonsense. And that's what's missing right now. Everybody's doing their own thing. But Dr. White, God's blessings to you. And I thank you for both of my children and what you instilled in them. And my daughter, she's just doing it. I mean, she's very smart. And I have to give credit where credit's due, so I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Absolute News. Davis, what are you going to miss the most?
Well, I'll tell you what. You miss, for me, you know the A-team?
Yeah.
When the guy says, I love it when a plan comes together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we started these schools like Seidner Academy or the Medical Magnet, the Law Magnet, or Performing Arts Elementary School. I just love to see programs come together to help our kids have great opportunities. So I'm going to miss hearing the great feedback I get from those programs. Last night at the board meeting, we had people reporting on the EMT fireman program we have at Tech.
Mm-hmm.
First year, but it's off to a great start. Those young people look good. And their uniforms and the equipment, and the Indianapolis Fire Department has been great as partners. But our kids need those opportunities, so I'm going to miss providing those kind of options for them. I won't miss the politics of it. I won't miss the haggling involved in it. But the kids and getting them better opportunities and programs, I'll miss that part.
How important is it for the next person who permanently sits in your seat?
what advice would you give to them? In other words, we when they come to town and they start fishing around and they go to our website and they hear this interview, what advice? Not so much, I'm sure I know you know Peggy Hinckley and I'm sure y'all have talked, but she ain't the one that's going to be sitting in the final seat come 2014. Yeah. It's going to be somebody else, a male, female. We don't know the ethnicity. We don't know anything. What advice would you give them?
Well,
you may be at the south of France by then.
Well, you know, a lot of people are pushing for a broader variation in the type of superintendent. They're encouraging to have CEOs, the business people in position. I don't care what kind of professional takes the job. They got to realize it's about children. And education at the superintendent's level is a dual role. You got to take care of the politics and the business end. But you also have to take care of the educational end about children. And you never should forget, even though we fix all these meals, we're not in the food business. Even though we run all these buses, we're not in the transportation business. Even though we do a lot of IT, we're not in the IT business. We're in the business of educating children. And so often we get off of our mission and get lost in all of that stuff. You got to keep focused on any decision you make has to go through, is this going to be best for the children?
A superintendent, whether it's you, whether it's Peggy Hinckley, whether it's any, you can walk in a school, you walk in a classroom, you observe what's going on in the school, and you tend to understand what you see because you've been in it. You've been in a classroom. You've run a building.
Right.
If I walk in a school and I've not been in a school, I don't understand the dynamics of school, I can be snowed.
Yeah.
To be quite honest, you know, if I'm a businessman, I could walk in there and somebody could snow me, you know, sell me, you know, a bill of goods. So how critical is it that even if it's somebody that comes out of education, they got to understand education. They might need to go sit in a class. Try to be a substitute teacher for a minute.
I think part of the thing you miss by not being from that particular profession is you don't have the perspective, you don't have the anticipation, and you don't really have the natural strategies that you know. For instance, you can go into a school and tell right away the nature of the school, the climate of the school, the environment, or what have you. You can see a situation and know that if you don't do something pretty soon, that situation is going to erupt into a bad situation. That kind of anticipation comes with experience and being involved in that. Most of the successful non-traditional superintendents have been smart enough to get an education person to be their chief academic officer, and they just run the politics and the business part.
And the chief academic officer basically does the superintendenting thing.
That's what they did in Chicago. Mm-hmm. That's what Joel Klein did in New York, what have you. And so if they're that intelligent and know what their weaknesses are, then they're going to get a strong academic officer to take care of it if they don't have the background.
Is it also understanding the community? Joel Klein was from New York, so he understood New York. What's his name out of Chicago was a Chicagoan, so he understood Chicago.
Arnie Duncan.
Michelle Rhee wasn't from Washington, didn't understand Washington, and still don't understand why she didn't work. And she's a great from everything I've heard, she's a great educator.
She's courageous.
A great educator, maybe not the politics. She'd be a great chief academic officer. Too expensive for here, but that's a whole nother.
My particular point is you got to have that community component. You got to have that sensitivity to the community. But those type things, if you don't have it, you better get it right away. And hopefully they're going to get someone, even if they're from the private sector, that would have those kind of sensitivities. It's a people business. Right. And the bottom line is not profit. It's productivity. It's to get kids graduated, get kids successful. And a lot of people, we've had some successful non-traditional candidates, but we've had a lot of them to bum out. Generals and majors that just have fallen by the wayside. More fallouts than successes, quite frankly. But the important thing is to have someone who truly cares about children and going to make this particular situation better for them.
Let me go to Larry wants to say goodbye to you at 239-1310. Hi, Larry.
How you doing, old boy? Dr. White.
Hey, Larry.
He's really a cheerful man. And you know what they always say, doctor? The best time to be leaving is when they're begging you to stay. So I just think we can keep control over Sam Odo and his gang down there, but we got to show up for the meetings, you know. And then the kids that come down there, those kids at 44, you know what I was thinking last night, Amos?
Mm-hmm.
They have to defend for themselves. They have to do like the kids done with the call in the National Guard. Because they don't want to leave their warm nest. They've already built that up, and they're in that school. They should just lay down in the hallways and say, we'll bring the police in, make a big media scandal out of it, and I bet you they won't touch them. So
but
that's
you know,
the threat they can use.
But I think what Dr. White did say earlier is that the principal that's at 44 will follow the kids to 67, and the principal to 67 will follow the kids to 44. Sometimes that helps. I appreciate it. Let me go to Brother Kareem, be our last caller, with Superintendent Dr. Eugene White, the exit interview.
Yeah,
hi, Kareem.
Doing?
Fine.
All right, Dr. White.
Yes.
Yeah, man, you know, I hate to see you go under these conditions, but I'm still got plenty of faith in you, man, and you tried to bring a vision to a community that, to me, is back in the dark ages when it comes down to education. Well, maybe by the time you get somewhere and you get comfortable, you can show them what it's really like. But I'm just saying, you know, farewell, good luck. And I learned a lot dealing with the little meetings that I went to while you was there, and I feel like this, that even though you told me about what the state's supposed to do as opposed to the federal government when it comes down to, Plessy versus Ferguson and Brown versus Board of Education,
right.
I feel like still that the answer is in the provisions that was in that federal guideline, and that if these people here look at that, they can stop Mindtrust and these other corporations for infiltrating and dismantling IPS for a profit at the expense of our children. But good luck, Dr. White.
Thank you.
Much love.
One final thing that is not your responsibility, but you're probably going to be talking about this with the interim superintendent, Dr. Peggy Hinckley. You have any idea how this sequester, if it hits, is going to affect IPS? Are there some people that are not on your payroll, but Uncle is paying for them, where in order to keep them, you're going to have to or Dr. Hinckley's going to have to find somebody?
Well, Dr. Hinckley already has a challenge because we have to cut the general fund by $30 million.
$30 million.
The sequester is going to impact our federal programs, Title I, Special Ed, those kind of things. We already have had a reduction in Title I funds. I expect that we'll be losing some other monies in Title I. I don't think it's going to be severe loss, but we're definitely going to fill it, and it's going to impact probably some positions in Title I.
And it's something where either IPS has to pick up the cost of those positions temporarily, or that person's out of a gig.
Yeah.
Which means you lose the kids lose the service.
But the big thing is, you know, depending on how much we lose may impact IPS's ability really to do preschool. Because Title I, we're looking at about $7 million out of Title I to fund preschool. If we take a tremendous hit from the sequester, then that could have a dynamic impact on IPS's ability to start the preschool.
He will be working next week, and then after next week, he'll be probably watching the basketball tournaments. See, call Emmert over to NCAA. Tell him to give you like a pass to all the tourney. You've earned it. Tell him to give you a pass to all the tourney games. Go around and watch the tournament.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, see? That could work. I could see it. Because, you know, the regionals are here.
I know. I got a pass to the regionals.
IU better not blow it after last night.
IU will be okay.
They'll be all right. Mm-hmm. They just got a wake-up call last night.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Eugene White, good luck to you.
Thank you, Amos.
Don't be a stranger. You know, you hosted this show once, and since you're going to be sitting on the beach, we're going to have to put you, we have to get your contact information so we put you in the Rolodex for vacation time.
Your technician thought I did a pretty good job, man.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we can put you in. We can put you
on
the
standby.
Yeah, we put you on the serious business. We put you on the standby. Let you go run a school system in DeKalb County. Coming. Oh, no. No. No, I agree with you. No,
not
you.
DeKalb, baby.
No, you know we'll send David Harris down to run DeKalb. Coming up, Mass Transit Plus. Was it a brawl? Was it a fight? Or why did they beat up on our little Indiana Pacers Center? It's After News with Amos after these.